Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program. That means Rich Guthrie is in the house. He is here to help answer your questions about birds. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society, Rich is our resident avian expert. The number to call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop, and comment there, or check in on Facebook, facebook.com/wamcradio. There is a Vox Pop post there. You can tweet us at WAMCRadio. Just use the hashtag VoxPop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But call. Please call. Yes, do it now. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here.
What's new, my man?
Happy spring.
Yeah, same to you.
Maybe.
Well,
you heard it.
Little snow,
a little sleet, a little freezing rain.
That's a bump in the road.
I know. And the guys are used to it out there. It happens every year.
The birds are fine with this?
They come through. Okay. You know, the early birds.
Yeah.
They get up here, and sure enough, right after they figure they're going to move in and have a happy summer, didn't happen yet.
Anyway.
But it's built in their system. They winter just to the south of us, the guys that are here now. And they run into this in New Jersey and Virginia and
sure.
North Carolina. So it's just part of the race to be here first.
And who is here at this time?
Lots of little guys. The
yeah.
swallows are back. The bluebirds are back.
Nice.
The blackbirds are back. And we have a bunch of guys that are moving through from south to north. The red poles, the siskins, and a lot of goldfinches and chickadees that have wintered just to our south are beginning to file through and on their way up to the Adirondacks, Green Mountains in Canada. So they're passing through.
And how long will they stay?
Oh, they'll just blitz on through. They'll stay, they'll raid the feeders, and then keep on moving.
All right, fair enough. Well, Rich, the phone lines are loaded here. Let's go right to the phones. Jill in Saratoga. Jill, you're first.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm glad to talk to you, Rich and Ray.
Hi.
I had a question about bluebirds. We have never had them in our yard until this winter, and they arrived on January 16th, and they're still here. And I'm wondering if there's any way to keep them around for longer. They have been eating our suet and our hullless sunflower seeds. And we also have a supply of water through the winter, which they used a lot. And I know they like boxes in meadows, and we do not have a meadow, but are there any other things that might keep them coming?
Well, you can try putting a box out even in a wooded yard. I've seen bluebirds nest in wooded situations. It's not their preference, but they seem to like you. So
yes,
I would.
They've been delightful.
Yes, well, I'm sure it's mutual. So, and I'm surprised to hear that they're coming for the sunflower seeds.
Yes, they eat a lot of them.
Yes, well, that's unusual for them. The other thing you might think of is maybe mealworms. I don't know if you're familiar with mealworms.
Yep.
And some people have put out boiled raisins and crumbled suet and the like. Aside from that, if they're going to want to start nesting soon, and if they don't find an appropriate nesting spot right
they'll
then and there,
yeah.
then they're going to move on. But, you know, they've got good memories. They know a good deal when they see it.
Yeah, well, they've been here on a daily basis, so that's really wonderful.
Well, enjoy every bit of them.
Boiled raisins.
Yes, boiled raisins. I've seen that work, and actually, I've seen people use things like grape jelly.
Delicious.
But the birds have to find it first, and once they do, you got them.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now. Appreciate the call. All right, here's one that dovetails with Jill's question. This is from Ellen. Came in via email. Hi, and thank you.
Hi, and thank you.
She begins. We felt lucky to have two bluebird families last year, and I intended to clean the boxes before this season, but kept putting it off due to deep snow. So, of course, yesterday I saw two bluebirds by one of the boxes, paying attention, poking in, etc. Would they reuse an old nest, or were they waiting around for me to show up and clean it? Now, of course, I'm reluctant to disturb the boxes in case they are already active for this year. Should I try to clean them now? That's from Ellen.
Yes. Go out there, do a little spring cleaning.
What if they're there already?
Oh, they're. It's too early for them to have set up real housekeeping at this moment. And you do want to brush out the old nest material and whatever junk there may be in there, and may have to evict a mouse or two. But on the other hand, I just was cleaning nest boxes just the other day, and it's not too late. It's not too early.
Okay.
It's a good time right now.
All right. And we have some breaking news that Joe Harzer and I have guilty on at least several of the charges that carry a possible death penalty. We'll have details for you, but that is breaking at this moment. Let's go to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're up.
Hey, Ray. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Yes, Saturday, March 28th, I saw a pileated woodpecker in the backyard up behind our house. I heard this call. I was out with my dogs about 8 a.m. Heard this call, and it wasn't quite familiar. I couldn't identify it, but it really reminded me of something at the end, the last notes. And this large, I looked up in the trees above the back of our yard and near the edge of a little orchard, and I saw this big bird flying, flittering around amongst the trees, and black body and everything, and he lighted on a tree trunk. It's a neighbor's pear tree up above our yard, and sitting there, you know, on the tree trunk, facing the tree, so I knew it had to be some kind of a woodpecker, and I couldn't, the size of it. It was a little smaller than a crow, and it was all black. I could see red on the top of the head, and I could see a little white on his neck further down when he moved his head around. He's got a couple of holes about 8-10 inches long, two of them, about 2.5 feet apart from each other up and down the trunk, about 3-4 inches wide, already opened up in the trunk of the tree there, and he was just pecking away clear, you know, not drumming away very rapidly, just like he was probably, you know, looking in for feeding on insects in the pear tree there. And he's been back the following day, the Sunday there, on the 29th. And then the Berkshire Eagle on the 29th, one of the staff photographers had a picture of a bobcat and I think a fox, and then a pileated woodpecker as well over in South Williamstown she had photographed recently.
Well, there you go.
He's been back several times, and our poor neighbor's tree, of course, is on its way out with all those insects in it and those big holes. But he's been back several times feeding on it. He's huge.
Well, you can think of him as the tree surgeon. And he's doing his job. Interesting you should mention. I had one in my yard this morning. I heard the loud tapping and the call.
Yep.
And sure enough, looked outside. And they're kind of spooky, but after a while, they become accustomed to being around people and tolerate you're looking at them at closer range. But
I'm right up behind my house, not too far up the hill, and there's a little bit of woodlands there, and then it goes up over into one more last road on the northwest corner of Adams, and then you've got the base of Mount Greylock.
Mm. Well, lots of room for them up there, and they'll be setting up their territory now and lining up a nest spot and defending it against the rival males. So.
I haven't seen one of those in I don't know how many years.
Well, Jim, thanks a lot for the call.
All right.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, here you go, Rich. This is off the AP wire. Zohar Tsarnaev has been convicted in the 2013 bombing of the Boston Marathon. A federal jury found Tsarnaev guilty in the 2013 terror attack that killed three people and wounded more than 260. He kept his hands folded in front of him and looked down at the defense table as the guilty verdicts were read. The jury will now decide whether the 21-year-old former college student should be sentenced to death or receive life in prison. Tsarnaev's conviction was widely expected, given his lawyer's startling admission during opening statements that he took part in the bombing. But the lawyer also argued that Tsarnaev's older brother, Tamerlan, masterminded the attack and enlisted his then 19-year-old brother to help. Prosecutors portrayed the brothers as full partners in a plan to retaliate against the U.S. for its wars in Muslim countries. So guilty on at least several of the charges that carry the death penalty. I haven't seen the full breakdown of the 30 charges yet, but we will have that for you later in the day. And let's go back to the phones. Nina in East Hoosick. Nina.
Hey, how are you guys? So I've been waiting for your show to come up. And before I ask you my question, I just want to quickly say that a full-grown bald eagle has returned to the Willamsack River on my road.
Oh, yeah?
Phoebe was seen flitting under the eave, building her or his nest, and the gregarious bluebirds. And I saw something remarkable in my yard this winter, the wonderful barred owl, very close, who had scoped out, this I thought was a wonderful symbiotic natural occurrence, which I hope you will confirm, Rich, where the deer who come like dogs into the yard had scraped away this very deep snow. In that very spot, the barred owl was very slowly swiveling its head, checking the ground for prey. I thought that was a wonderful example of symbiosis in nature and how species seem to cooperate. And you can confirm that or not, as the case may be. My question about the ducks, and so I'll fold that in to what I called about most importantly, is I saw a species of duck, not merganser. There are mergansers and mallards on the Wolunsack, and this is a duck I couldn't find a picture of that is black and white, not a merganser again, with pointed wings and malar stripes. You know, it's black with, I can't remember whether it's a black head with white stripes or white with black. I think it's black with white stripes, very fine stripes, and some stippling or checkerboarding on the wings. Very shy. The only time I've ever seen them. I wonder if you have any ideas.
Hey, would you mind hanging on the line for a minute, Nina? We have a break coming up here, and I'd like to know, too. So if you don't mind.
I will hang on. Sure. Thank you.
All right. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We'll take a short break. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Skidmore Departments of Music and Dance, presenting Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty with 80 dancers and 73 musicians at Zenkel, Friday through Sunday, skidmore.edu/Zenkel. Kern Compliance Services, Greenwich, New York, compliance and regulatory consultants for life insurance and annuity carriers and their distribution partners, kerncompliance.com. Snow Farm Summer, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, the New England Craft Program for students ages 13 through 18, glass blowing, drawing, ceramics, and more, 2 or 4 weeks intensive instruction in July, snowfarm.org for information. Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley, providing sexual and reproductive health and education services in Dutchess, Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties for over 80 years, ppmhv.org. And the Office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, serving the Hudson Valley since 1986. WoodstockDentist.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. That means we talk birds at 1-800-348-2551. Nina in East Hoosick is hanging on the line. She has a desperate need for an identification of a black and white duck. Now, Nina, if you could make the sound for us, I think you could help Rich find out.
Yeah, you know, I'd be happy to, but they didn't cry out as they took off the water. But I did give some very definite identification marks, although they are by no means perfect. Black head, very fine white striping on the head, and pointed wings, smallish duck, mid-sized duck, not the smallest, mid-sized duck, definitely not a merganser that I can recognize anyway, because I've seen them and made identifications of them, both male and female. And the pointed wing was very distinct.
I think Rich has it, Nina.
I wonder if you have any ideas, Rich.
Well, I'm actually going to suggest that it was, in fact, a merganser, but the small merganser, the hooded merganser, which has the pattern that you described, not the common merganser, but this little guy has that black and white pattern on the head, and they are found, a few of them remain in open water in our area through the winter, so I suggest that might be hooded merganser that you saw.
Okay. What do you think, Nina?
Well, that's interesting. This is not, you know, the female of the common merganser has the red crest that rises up. That is not this bird.
Right.
So we're not. That's so maybe it is a hooded merganser. I was unable to find it in my bird book of birds of the Northeast, but I will go onto the internet and look. And if you could comment on what I said about the behavior of the barred owl scoping out where the deer had scraped away the snow as symbiotic animal behavior. Have you seen that?
Well, I would say that rather than symbiotic, I'd say it's more opportunistic.
Ah.
The owl saw a chance to find a better chance to get a meal and took advantage of it.
Yeah.
The deer have nothing to gain in that combination, in that cooperative adventure. So
okay.
I would say that the owl is looking at the bare ground for
smart
little guys that run back and forth and make a meal.
Let's go to Dana in Pittsfield. Dana, you're on.
Hey, thanks for calling, for taking my call.
Sure.
We moved into a new house in December, and in this house, the kitchen's on the second floor, and the stove has an exhaust vent that goes to the outside,
mm-hmm.
and the pipe's about 6 feet long to the outside, 8 inches wide, and there's no covering on the outside. We're going to get something on there. But anyway, we heard noise in there, and we moved from Beckett, where we had lots of mice, so we thought, oh, it's mice again. So I took the pipe off the stove, because we're going to put in some peppermint oil because they don't like it, and we get rid of them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I opened up the pipe, I found all this nesting material
mm-hmm.
in there. And I grabbed some of it, but I just sealed the pipe back up. And since then, we've heard the birds in there.
Oh, boy.
So what are my options?
Well, probably starlings. They like to find that kind of stovepipe or vent pipe
yep.
and move in and nest. If they actually haven't laid any eggs yet, then you're ahead of the game. You can clean it out, cap it, and put a little hardware cloth over the cap, something to prevent them from getting back into it.
Well, how do I know if they've laid eggs or not?
Can you see the nest itself?
No.
No. Well, then you're going to have to use a little behavior watching.
The
chances are they have not yet laid eggs. They're probably just setting up housekeeping. It's a little early for even for starlings to be nesting.
Okay.
So you'll know if there are young in there because they'll be bringing food, but that's way too early for that even.
Okay.
All
so
right.
Check and see the
right.
Birds coming and going, and if they're all out, then I would say just go ahead and cap it.
Okay. Is there any one time of day where they're specifically out? I mean, I know they don't go to work or something.
First thing in the morning. Yeah.
First thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning when they go out, because they'll be hungry and they'll go out to grab a meal, and then you can close the door behind them.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. Okay. Thank you very much.
Hey, Dana, let us know how you did, all right?
I sure will.
Appreciate the call. Let's go over to Maureen in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Maureen, you're on.
Hi, fellas. Thanks for the program.
You're welcome.
I have a simple question or a humble question. How do you wean the birds from the bird feeder before the bears come? I have, like, you know, lots of sweet little birds coming. I have some food left, but, you know, I don't know when to stop, and I don't know when the bears are coming, but I've had bears on my porch. So
oh, boy. Oh, you don't want that.
No, I don't. No.
Well, here's the my suggestion is just cut them off. Cold turkey.
And they'll be fine, right?
They'll be fine.
Yeah, I have good property around here with lots of, you know.
I wouldn't worry about it. The birds are kind of...
They're so little.
They are. The goldfinches and chickadees and the nuthatches and the like. I would just say stop when you're ready.
Okay.
It's the same thing I say to people when they're headed to Florida for the winter, the lucky folks.
Yeah.
The birds will find food elsewhere. They'll just move on. So, you know, a few of them will...
Finish the feed, pull the feeders.
Say that again?
Finish the feed I have,
yes.
And pull the feeders.
Yes, exactly.
And they'll be okay.
Although you can keep some sort of feeding operation going. Thistle seed will keep the goldfinches happy, and the bears not interested.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
Just keep it out of reach, you know, hang it from a sock from a tree.
Yeah.
And hummingbird feeders, it's not... Well, it's a little early, but they are back in southern parts of southern states. So get the hummingbird feeders ready to go and have fun with that.
Well, all right.
Thank you.
Maureen, we appreciate the call. Well, won't the bears enjoy the sugary nectar that the hummingbirds enjoy?
If they get at it, but usually the hummingbird feeders are hanging from some sort of a... position where the bears will not find it in the first place or will have it.
They won't smell it.
No, not really.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't worry about that. I would keep the It's too small a game for them.
We have discussed many times people who are concerned about stopping feeding, and you always say the same thing. The birds will abide.
They will get by.
All right, let's go to, I think this is Layra in Old Chatham.
Yes, hi.
You're on.
How are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. So I was calling at the request of my daughters, who are very excited about birds these days, because we've been seeing a lot of bald eagles in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived in the Old Chatham area for over 15 years and have never seen bald eagles until this spring. And we've had probably 6 or 7 sightings of them so far. And we've seen 2 adults at the same time. And then we've seen them separately, even catching fish and eating fish.
Wow.
And we've also seen what we think is maybe a 1 or 2 year old juvenile. No, certainly the size, the severe hook to the beak, but just not the coloring. The head has more of a white, like, splattering in the brown and a little bit of white splattering in the tail. And we were just wondering if other people have been seeing them, if they've always lived there, we just haven't seen them before, or if they're moving in.
More likely they are moving through. The numbers of bald eagles in the area have increased dramatically over the last couple of decades. And,
oh, really?
And continue to increase. So I would suggest that these are part of that growing family. And looking for new places to find food and hopefully also to nest.
Now, so where do they like to nest?
They near water,
yeah,
for the most part, and on a tall tree, a very sturdy tall tree that oftentimes will hang out over the water, a branch at near or over water. So,
and that is where we have seen them sometimes. Or we live only about a half a mile from the Kindercook Creek. And so 2 times we've seen them on trees right over the Kinderhook Creek.
There you go.
So it would be the adults that will be setting up territories now. And the young ones will just keep roaming around until they're mature enough to take care of things themselves.
All right.
Oh, wow.
It's exciting.
Well, that's wonderful. It's very exciting.
Yes.
Thank you. And report back next show if you see any more.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call. So that's quite a success story, isn't it? The return
of
the bald
eagles. Oh, it's one of the best stories around. The success of the bald eagles. Thanks to my good friends in the Department of Environmental Conservation in New York who created, actually instituted this program. I mean, it's pretty bold given the day and time that they were doing it.
Isn't there a danger at some point of there being too many?
No.
No? Not for a while?
Well, you know, it's a good question, though, but nature has a way of balancing things out. Red-tailed hawks are another, they did it on their own, but their numbers have increased dramatically over time, mm-hmm. over the recent years, thank you to the cleanup of the environment. And the red-tailed hawks are at a point now where they're sort of expanding, they're bursting at the seams. They are now choosing less than desirable nest sites, because all the good sites are taken.
Huh.
So now they have to go to the marginal sites and questionable sites. There's actually a pair nesting right over in the Education Department building in the city of Albany, New York.
Well, these predatory birds, doesn't that stand a problem of potential of affecting the balance in the food chain?
Well, it's a pendulum. My good friend Dr. Heinz Meng did a study on that many years ago, showing the relationship between prey and predator and prey, where it's sort of like a balancing act, a roller coaster ride. The prey will increase, the predators will increase. The prey will decrease, the predators will. And it's cyclical. It goes on like that over time and time and time.
Okay.
So the same thing happens in many of that. That's why we have some years we have a big eruption of snowy owls from the Arctic that come down, because they've produced the food supply, so they come down shopping in our neighborhood.
Ah, okay. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Here is one that came in via email from Gina. A friend swears she saw a peregrine falcon in Rhinebeck. I love her too much to think she's senile. Is it possible? I assume that means, is it not that she's senile. Secondly, what's a very large black bird whose wingspan from underneath is half white on the edges? I was hoping it was a juvenile eagle, but dot, dot, dot.
But dot, dot, dot. Well, the peregrine, for sure. Your
really?
Friend is not senile. Your friend likely did see a peregrine falcon. Another one of those happy stories where
yeah.
With the cleanup of the environment, the peregrine falcon is now, I wouldn't say common, but readily found throughout up and down the Hudson Valley, the Connecticut River Valley, Lake Champlain, throughout the listening area. The peregrine falcon is now regularly seen throughout the area. They nest probably down in Rhinebeck on the Kingston-Rhinecliffe Bridge.
Ah, is it, they
the
like
Hudson
that
River.
Sort of thing.
They
yeah.
like tall cliff-like structures, and a bridge over the river looks like enough like a cliff for them to suit their needs.
All right, before we get back to the phones, here's another one that came in via email. This is from Tom. Says, I work alongside the Hudson River in Poughkeepsie. At certain times of the year, there are thousands of crows all heading toward the river. You could look at the sky for hours, and there will always be crows flying west. You'll see trees black with crows. What's happening? That's from Tom.
Sociable crows.
Yeah?
That's the way they are. And that's only through the winter. That crowd scene will break up soon as they migrate north and will head back up to the North Country to spend the summer. It's one of the things I take great delight in finding a crow roost and watching them come in. The hordes of crows come in. Not everybody's pleased with it, but I am.
They're smart birds, right?
They're smart birds, and I like them very much.
All right, fair enough. You like crows. Okay, Suzanne in Catskill, you're on. Suzanne.
Hi there, guys. Thanks very much for the show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. I have heard and from you and others that between the West Nile virus and feral cats and raccoons, that bird populations, you know, took a nosedive. But I'm filling my feeder a lot more often than I was a year ago. Is that just because I'm a free lunch, or are they coming back?
Well, it depends. This year, we have had a large number of northern birds come down for the winter. And once they found the feeder set up in your yard or other people's situations, and they just move right in and make themselves happy. Some of them will continue to migrate south and are now rebounding, turning around, and heading back north again. So I think it's a matter of, again, one of these cyclical events where the numbers go up, and voila, we now have a lot of birds at our feeders.
Because of migration or because of increased population?
Neither, actually. It's just a matter of the distribution of the population. The population may be up north and stationary, satisfied, and some winters and other winters they'll be forced to move south, and then they are here. So I think it's a matter of timing, location, and their own distribution. So.
Okay.
I don't think there's a special increase in the songbirds that are coming to bird feeders. I think, it's just a matter of the sequence of events and their life cycles.
Good question.
I was hoping the population was increasing, but what the heck?
What the heck? No, I think it's pretty, for most part, they're pretty stable. Some birds are increasing in numbers. If you go to sites like eBird, the Cornell site that documents the occurrence of birds and their distribution. It's a citizen science opportunity for folks to input data from their own backyards and neighborhoods. eBird.org is a good site to monitor and keep track of these distribution changes.
Great. Thanks for the tip.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Suzanne. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Go to line 4. I can't quite read it. Is it Nova?
Yes, well,
you
Nova.
You are on the air.
Oh, thank you. I'm wondering if you can tell me why. Well, you already kind of explained it to me that there are no birds this year. I mean, I have several feeders out, and last year we had lots of. And now the goldfinches are not even turning.
Well, they're all over at Susan's backyard feeding on her.
Suzanne,
yes.
I had a bunch of pine siskins, but otherwise. This spring doesn't look very good. I've had lots of breeders here before, and it doesn't look very good this year.
Well, again, it's a matter of distribution and Siskins this year have not really made a big move into the area. They have last year and in some prior years, but this year they the Siskin population has laid back, whereas the Red Pole population has moved into some neighborhoods, especially at the higher elevations in the Berkshires, that where they've inundated backyard bird feeders. But the goldfinches, I can say from my own experience, are up in dramatic numbers. Again,
wow.
it's a matter of
here.
Where they are.
Yes. Yeah, the pine siskins took over for the goldfinches this year. I must have 100 of them every day at the feeders. And the goldfinch just blacked out.
Well, again, it's a matter of who happens to be what flock tended to wave into an area over the course of the winter. So, again, it's a matter of distribution and the mm-hmm. own peculiarities of the bird's movement.
Sometimes, and every year is a little different.
Every year is a little different, and each region is a little bit different. But some years they just flood through like a tsunami of siskins or red poles. Other years it's kind of like a little trickle here and there, a little puddle of them.
Mm. Okay, well, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it, Nova. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And again, the breaking news this hour, Joe Harzer and I have found guilty on all 30 counts of in the Boston Marathon bombing case, and now eligible for the death penalty on, I believe, 17 of those counts. That is a separate deliberation by the same jury. We'll take a break here and get back to more calls with our friend Rich Guthrie in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Foods. With Earth Day celebrations at both Rhinebeck and Woodstock stores, Saturday, April 18th, noon to 3, sunflowernatural.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. Ashfieldstone.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York. Providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. And Ashokan Center, retreats, conferences, family celebrations, and school programs, a classroom in the wild, ashokancenter.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie's here, boys and girls. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And, Rich, you have another big event coming up.
Big event, yes.
What's that?
This is a time of year. It's a good time to get out, move around, get out to see some birds in familiar spots and find some new spots and to make some new friends. I will say that on with the Alan DeVoe Bird Club in the Chatham, New York area, I'll be doing the dinner program, the annual dinner on April 18th, the evening of Saturday, April 18th.
And so what does the program consist of?
Well, it'll be me talking about birds.
Okay.
And the topic will be the changes. We talked a little bit about changes this afternoon. I'll be talking about the changes I've seen over the many years that I've been out birdwatching.
In since populations?
Population distribution and some other surprising changes that have come about.
Interesting. All right.
Yes, so this will be a dinner program for the Alan DeVoe Bird Club annual meeting.
Nice.
In Old Chatham, New York, and it's on April 18th. And for information, you can go to the website, Alan DeVoe Bird Club, A-L-A-N-D-E-V-O-E.
Okay.
And contact them and pick up information about how you can join us.
So you're an after-dinner speaker now.
I will.
Who knew?
Hey, desserts included.
All right, let's go to Ellen in Montgomery, Mass. Ellen, you're on.
Hi, thank you very much. I just wanted to add a little tidbit to the bluebird saga. We up in Montgomery, I live up here, and also my sister and brother-in-law live one street over. We were talking about bluebirds in the dead of winter, and a few days later, my sister called me and said, hey, Steve's watching bluebirds come out of one bluebird house one at a time, and there were about 12 to 13 every day.
Wow. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
That's terrific.
There's no zoning ordinance against that?
I guess not in Montgomery.
Fair
but,
enough.
You know, we can, that's one of the benefits of cleaning out a bluebird nest box in the fall. It opens it up for that opportunity. And through the winter, bluebirds are communal roosters like that, where they'll, and some other birds will do the same. Chickadees will do the same, and downy woodpeckers. So I would say that, yes, lucky. Now let's hope that a pair of them will select that box and boot all the rest of them out and raise their family there.
Now, could that be contentious if the if a pair says, hey, listen, we want this place for ourselves?
It's a rite of spring.
Okay.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I had two clutches last summer, so we're very, and he usually, actually, I don't think he got any bluebirds last year as far as nesting went, but he has more of an open field. But it's, yes, and we have seen them here and there pretty much all winter long, you know, either, as the woman had said before, near some water, you know, we have a heated bird bath, you know, once in a while. I have never, again, like you were saying, I've never seen them eat any seed, but if she said she's seen them eat seed and suet, you know, that's great.
That happens, and I've heard of that happening. Yeah. I had a friend who used to gather up clusterflies in the fall.
How do you gather up clusterflies?
Any windowsill will have dozens of them.
Oh, I see.
You know, farmhouses. They're just
you vacuum them up.
Well, he put them in. He saved them.
Oh, how nice.
For the bluebirds. Well,
that's a good
nice
idea.
For the bluebirds.
A little snack.
Yes, snacks it was. And other things. The grape jelly pot works when they learn about it. Then you got them hooked.
Sounds great. I'll have to give that a try next winter. I'm just really, really glad this winter's over.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's just hope so, Ellen, all right? Maybe we'll get a little snow tonight, so
all
watch
right.
out.
Yes, we will too, definitely. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call. So that's interesting. In the winter, they will live communally. Is that for warmth?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And then at the spring, no one cares. They don't want to stick together.
They pair up and... some birds do maintain extended family communes, but not all.
Okay.
Most of them do not. They're
communistic
just,
birds. Interesting.
Yes.
Here's one that came in via email. Growing up, I was never interested in birds. Thanks for sharing. But I was borderline obsessed with dinosaurs. My grandmother absolutely adored birds, and she had volumes of literature on them and all sorts of bird feeders, even bird clocks and other paraphernalia. Well, that's interesting. But don't worry. It stopped well short of tacky. She passed a couple years ago, and I would like to have something I can associate with her, so I've been thinking about bird watching. It makes sense, considering how closely they are connected to dinosaurs, so I'm sure I could really enjoy it and have a piece of my grandmother with me. What do you recommend for spotting scopes and cameras for a totally green amateur? Thanks so much.
What I strongly recommend is finding whatever local bird club is in your area and joining them on a field trip, and you'll find that most folks, in fact, everybody likes to share, I think it's universal, likes to share their knowledge, including knowledge about cameras, spotting scopes, binoculars, field guides, which ones they recommend. And you'll get a chance, I'm sure, to try them out and then figure out which one it best suits your needs. So I would say join the local bird club, either Audubon Society, and go from there.
Fair enough. That's from Jeff. And Jeff, thank you very much for emailing. You know, the Brontosaurus is now back as one of the dinosaur names.
I saw
that.
Did
you see that?
It makes me happy.
I,
you know, as a kid, I was saying, what's missing in this picture?
Well, I would always say Brontosaurus, and I'd be corrected by my children. And after I was done grounding them, I was quite hurt by the whole thing.
Oh.
But now I can say, you know what?
See that?
Brontosaurus is still the Apatosaurus. What happened to this show?
Yes.
Let's go to birds
are our feathered dinosaurs. They are now our feathered dinosaurs.
Sari in Cornwallville, you're on. Hello.
Hello there.
Hello there.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. You're on.
Listen, I'm on the air.
Yes. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've got the radio turned off just to make it clear. I've got a bad phone connection.
Okay, we can hear you just fine. So you go ahead and roll.
Thank you. I have this little woodland next to the road, which is on a hill, and it's no good for anything except as some kind of a bird sanctuary. Now, I've started building birds' nests, and I would like to attach them to the trees. I have a collection of pines and maples and locust.
Okay.
I once had somebody come in and cut up my boards, and he had a lot of trouble finding nails in trees. So I would like to know how to attach the nest to the trees without using metal nails.
Okay.
Well, I don't understand why nails would be a problem.
Well, if you're going to cut into boards eventually down the road, maybe in a few years' time, that would interfere with the saw.
Okay.
Well,
right?
Lots of folks that I know will leave part of the nail exposed so that as the tree grows and expands, it pushes out to that exposed part of the nail and will damage the tree or damage the nest box. I've seen that used quite successfully in many places. The other possibility, some of the birds, you can actually hang a nest box from a branch, leaving it somewhat suspended.
Sure.
In such a fashion that it doesn't spin around. You know, you could put two lines onto it or three lines so that it's more or less fixed. But and some birds will actually prefer that, it seems. The wrens, for example, will take a nest of that sort with a little tiny hole. You could also use a larger nest box. I don't know if you've tried it with a 3-inch diameter hole and a 12-inch box that might be might be used by screech owls and the like. So there's all sorts of possibilities, but I wouldn't let hanging them or fixing them to a tree interfere with your plan.
All right, Sari, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Very interesting. Let's go to Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on.
Ray, Rich, how are you doing?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I've been in downtown Saratoga Springs at this house for about, I don't know, 13 and a half, 14 years, but I think we haven't talked about bluebirds in a few minutes, so we're bringing you back there. And we had, like, for the first time, my wife calls it a dwarf. We've had this tree for years, a dwarf crabapple tree, but one day I looked out for, like, a month ago for the next 3 or 4 weeks straight, there were, like, 5 or 6 bluebirds there every day.
Mm-hmm.
So then I noticed they left, and then I went to my local birding store, and I got a little hanger thing and put mealworms in there because they said bluebirds love them, but they haven't been back yet. So a two-part question, will they come back? And secondly, I do have a bluebird box, but I don't think it's ever been inhabited. I'm wondering what I can do. We have a fenced yard to make the optimum location for that bluebird box so it gets inhabited.
Well, it depends on the actual layout of the yard itself. I would continue to give it a try, but the likelihood in an urban setting, nesting bluebirds are going to be difficult to find. The birds were there because of your crabapple tree. There were leftover apples on there, and that's just what they were after.
Hmm.
And once they were satisfied or depleted that supply, then off they went. So I don't have, and I didn't get whether or not they were coming. You said they did not come to the mealworm feeder?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed they were gone, so there was a little time in between, and then I put that out, and now we're just getting the black-capped chickadees eating them, which is fine.
I wouldn't complain about that. But
No, I like those guys, but it would be nice to see those bluebirds in the summer, which I guess maybe it's just too loud downtown for them.
Probably the case. I think they probably will prefer a more rural or open area than a downtown urban setting.
Okay.
So I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but then you might have some other birds like the chickadees or nuthatches or perhaps even the wrens move in and use that as a nest box.
Okay, and of course the food supply will be more prevalent in the better weather, so the bluebirds won't need to be desperate and come to my yard.
Yeah, they've probably found another crabapple tree down the road and are devouring that. So good for you, though. And the waxwings are moving through. Up further north from Albany, their Bohemian waxwings are frequenting areas that have crabapple trees. So that's always a benefit of those, keeping those crabapple trees around. So.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Thanks, guys.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. This one is from Jamie. The blackbirds with the green fluorescent heads. One of them had a Skeletor-like white face. Skeletor, good reference. Was this a genetic issue, or was this bird sick in some way? Was acting normal? I have a photo, but can't get it out of my phone right now.
Okay, it sounds like grackles, the common grackle, which is a very large blackbird with that iridescent green sheen. And every now and then in these bird populations, you'll find one with an aberration, a little spurious markings on it, usually white. And I suspect that's what the case is. We call them sports or partially leucistic blackbirds.
Okay.
It happens in many of the different bird species.
This is from Sandy. And this is a serious one. Last summer fall, a yellow-bellied sapsucker drilled 4 or 5 holes in our mahogany house clapboards. The mahogany is great because there are no knot holes, but now it has holes. One hairy woodpecker looked into them during the Christmas count. Do you have any suggestions to keep them away before the season starts? That's from Sandy.
Well, it's very difficult. I presume they're not feeding, but either drumming or looking for a nest site. So I would cover the area over with burlap for the time being.
The whole side of the clapboard house?
No, where the birds have been attracted to.
Okay.
And keep them from getting to that part of the wood. Other than that, I know woodpecker attraction to houses is a perennial problem in many places, and let's hope that it's not for food. If it's for food, then it's a problem of a whole different sort.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Gordon in Syracuse. Gordon, are you actually in Syracuse or on the way to Syracuse?
No. I live in Syracuse, but I'm driving. I'm a truck driver, so.
All right, man, you're on the air.
Okay. My question is in regards, I feed the birds in spring, summer, and fall. I get a wide range of birds. I have downy woodpeckers and chickadees and a lot of golden nut finches, etc. I wanted to feed them in the winter this year, so I left suet out, and I also left a high-quality mix with sunflower and corn and various other types of seeds, and I didn't really have any birds all winter. Is it because I don't have birds that winter over, or am I doing something wrong?
It doesn't sound like you're doing anything wrong. It's a the birds, as mentioned earlier, will come and go at their own whims, and I'm surprised you're not getting a good combination of birds coming to a feeder setup like that. So it's hard to say. You got the suet, you got the varied feeder mix, and I presume the feeder situation is such that it's safe from predators such as neighborhood cats or hawks.
Absolutely. I have all my feeders hang from a very large overhang eave.
Uh-huh.
Only the birds can get to it. The squirrels can't even get to them. So they're perfectly safe. And like I said, I have a wide range and a large number of birds the rest of the year. I put out sunflower seeds. I put out the thistle for the other birds. I get nuthatches. I have downies and hairy woodpeckers. The whole gamut. I just, like I said, nothing this winter.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that, but again, they're all in Suzanne's yard.
So Gordon is doing everything right.
Gordon, it sounds like you're right on the right track there, but I would maybe next year.
Okay. Here's one quickly. Let's go over to line 4. Henry in Ashfield. Henry, you're up. Hello, Henry.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. You have about a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to check out Halifax Gorge yesterday morning with a lady friend.
Right.
And we saw a bird that I have never seen or heard of before.
Okay.
She said she had seen them, and she identified it as a hairy-chested nut scratcher.
Oh,
I wondered if you had seen them or can tell me anything about them.
Yeah, that's a joke, right?
I presume so.
Okay, thanks, Henry. I'm glad we wasted all that time. Here's one that came in via email. One word for you, woodpeckers. Sorry to say, though, I love watching birds on my feeder. Can't let these critters eat my house. Their pecking wakes me up in the early morn. This is from Joan. Sometimes I run outside and bang on the house to scare them. I have hung a metallic ribbon over the area they have been hitting, and I have treated the property for termites. Still, I hear them, and I heard them again this morning. What else can I do? And then she writes the Woody Woodpecker, ha, 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 but I can't do it. So that's from Joan.
Well, again, it's one of those things where woodpeckers are hard to deter when it comes to either feeding or drumming. They are quite frankly, a nuisance, but thankfully not everybody suffers from that.
But so Joan obviously does.
Obviously does. And all I can say is, once again, if you find out where they found that resonant spot, to cover it with a material that will keep them, and eventually they'll have to move on. Their object there is to sing through drumming.
Yeah.
And if they can't get the resonance, they're going to have to move on. So.
Okay.
Well,
that's where we will leave it. There are so many more calls we could get to. We could do another 2 hours of the show, Rich. But unfortunately, there are other programs. So great time. Always fun having you here.
If you have some questions on it, you can always contact me. And not to forget about the blog at thetimesunion.com. Look up birding.
Birding at the Times
and
Union blog.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
All right, man. Good luck with your after-dinner speaking engagements. And
April 18th at Old Chatham, New York.
We'll see you next time. Support comes from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day. So you or a loved one can stay in your home, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. The Lathrop community, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. Flurry Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing information and advice for sprucing up current or adding new decks, from exotic hardwoods to composite decking, offering delivery, flurrylumber.com. And Poughkeepsie Farm Project, connecting food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2015 season. Farmproject.org. All right. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. It was fun. Rich Guthrie, thank you. Thanks for all your calls today, except for the last one, and your emails. Tomorrow we talk plumbing. How can you lose?